Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're going to preview a very different Connecticut NOFA Organicon Winter Conference. We normally cover in person for an entire show, it goes virtual. We'll chat with the coordinator about how you can get the most from this online experience, getting your hands dirty. Then we're going to return to the subject of and its potential for providing critical climate fits, economic development, jobs, and stick around as we talk it up with representatives from Everett Offshore Northica, who will be developing offshore wind farms right off the Connecticut coastline. And we'll wrap introducing you to yet another boutique Connecticut nonprofit that started as a grassroots movement to help connect young people to STEM education and careers. We'll bring in the founder of Random Hacks of Kindness, Jr., which is providing young people a hands-on learning experience where they apply technology to achieve social good. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Abilis, a nonprofit providing services and support for individuals with special needs and their families, is hosting a free virtual information session on Zoom called Maximizing Government Benefits for Young Adults with Special Needs Entering the Workforce. It's coming up Thursday, March 4th, this Thursday from 5:30 to 7. The virtual webinar will help parents, caregivers, and young adults with special needs learn how to maintain government benefits while having a job. This information session is open to the public and offered at no cost. However, seats are limited and registration is required. So get on that by visiting abilis.us/calendar. That's abilis.us/calendar. Well, right about this time, we'd be prepping you to spend almost an hour of the award-winning For the People meandering through Organicon, the Connecticut Northeast Organic Farming Association and NOFA Rhode Island's Winter Conference, as we have so fondly done every year going back, 20, 25 years or so. But this year is going to be very different, as we said in our introduction. That's right. The conference this year is going virtual. It's coming up next weekend, March 6th, from 9 to 1, and it's going to be all online. But that doesn't mean it's not going to offer a ton of really important and exciting activities for anyone who wants to get their hands in the ground, whether you're a organic landscaper, a farmer, a gardener, someone who's interested in maybe, putting a can out on the back deck and growing some tomatoes, starting a mulch pile in the yard. Lots and lots of information coming in, and a very, very dynamic keynote speaker, as always. We'll hear a little bit about Karen Washington as we chat with our guest this morning, Ashley Kenny. She is the conference coordinator for Connecticut NOFA's Winter Conference. Ashley, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, really great to have you. Sorry, I won't be seeing you next weekend in person and, actually going face-to-face with the microphone with a bunch of your guests and vendors. But and this is a great opportunity because we've almost never had the chance to kind of preview the conferences just a couple times over the past 20 years or so. So since it's going all virtual, it can be accessible to a lot more people. Is your feeling one of more excitement than trepidation because of the possibility that so many more people will be able to come and learn from NOFA and all your guests and speakers this year?
That's a great question. I know we've all been Zooming all year long, and I actually was the workshop coordinator for NOFA Massachusetts Winter Conference, and so I've already done one of these, and the resounding sort of comment at the end was, wow, I can't believe how much community I felt doing this. Oftentimes at the face-to-face conference, we quickly say, hi, bye, I'm going to this room, I'm going to that room, I don't have time, it's lunchtime, I'm only going to sit with my friends. And even though there's 600 people there, you only see a couple.
Right.
The really cool thing about this is that You can see who's there. You can interact with them in a timely fashion. You're interacting, you know, in real time. And you actually get a little bit more face-to-face with folks that you might not have gotten at the real, you know, live conference. And so for me, that's a plus. And there's a lot of aspects of this virtual conference that I'm actually going to take forward in the future when we are able to get back face-to-face.
Great. Well, one of the things that is going to be a constant this year, as it has in the past couple of years since we lost our beloved Bill Dusing, is the Bill Dusing Award, which is going to be happening virtually this year. Let folks know a little bit about that as we kind of hearken back to the guy who was almost the precursor to the award winning For the People when he hosted an organic gardening program on one of our radio stations in New Haven back almost 50 years ago.
Wow. Yes. No, that the Bill Dusing Annual Living on the Earth Award to us is something that will always happen in conjunction with the winter conference. And so this year, our conference actually kicks off Friday, March 5th at 7 p.m. Then, so from 7 to 7:15, both chapters of NOFA, Rhode Island and Connecticut NOFA, will be having our annual meeting. The public's welcome to join. We vote in, you know, board members.
New leadership, yep.
Some board members' terms are over. Yeah. It's very cut and dry. However, right after that, we'll be having the Bill Dusing Award. And I don't really want to spoil who's the recipient
this year. Oh, no, we're not going to do that.
So we're very, very excited. There'll be a short video clip, a presentation of the award, and a speech from the winner. And directly after that, at 7:30, from 7:30 to 9 that evening, will be Karen Washington, our keynote speaker.
Well, tell us more about Karen.
Oh, my goodness. So Karen's somebody who usually we put out a poll, who would you like to see as the you know, as our keynote speaker.
Yeah.
And Karen just really, truly was, everyone just said, yes, nope, that's the only person we want to see this year. And we feel very fortunate to have Karen. So Karen is not only a farmer, but an activist as well, who's lived in New York City her whole life. She spent most of her life promoting urban farming as a way for all New Yorkers to access fresh and locally grown food. She mainly resides in the Bronx, but then she also has a farm in upstate New York called Rise and Root Farm that is in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
Karen has worked and been a board member at the New York Botanical Gardens. She's been a member of La Familia Verde Community Garden Coalition. She co-founded the Black Urban Growers, or BUGS, organization. And in 2012, Ebony Magazine voted her one of their most 100 most influential African-Americans in the entire country. And then in 2014, she won the James Beard Leadership Award.
Nice.
So, I mean, not only that, but if you care to, the New York Times Magazine actually did an entire article about Black farmers and activists this past weekend, and Karen is right there, front page.
Wow,
nice. Wonderful article. And we're just so lucky to have her. We really gave her no parameters for her speech. We said,
oh, that's great.
Can you make the theme of the conference? You tell us what's important to you this year.
From the cover of the New York Times Magazine to NOFA's virtual Organicon, which is, as we heard, kicking off this coming Friday night with Karen Washington as the keynote speaker, as well as the Bill Dusing Award. Then comes the main event on Saturday, 25 plus food and farming workshops. Folks will get to learn about innovations in organic agriculture and get a plenty of opportunities to meet farmers and gardeners that might be able to pass on a tip or receive one. You never know. It doesn't take a prolific or well-experienced gardener to find a new trick that can spread like wildfire, figuratively, benefit anybody who's into gardening, whether it's organic or not.
So what we're doing this year is the conference is running Saturday, March 6th from 9 a.m. to about 1:30 p.m. And then we're doing it again, the same thing, 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. the next Saturday, the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for running it two times like this is that I personally feel like a lot of us have Zoom fatigue, and to ask folks to give up an entire weekend to sit in front of their computer. I just thought, you know what? Let's do half a conference day on one Saturday and half on the next. And that way you have the rest of your afternoon. You're not in front of a screen. Many of us farmers and gardeners are not used to doing that. And then you can go about your day. And so we have, there'll be three workshop slots on both days and about five workshops in each. So 15 workshops the first Saturday and then 15 the second.
Mm-hmm. So what are we looking at in terms of some of the newest guests to Organicon who will be presenting? Which ones, I mean, obviously it's like picking your favorite child, but what are a couple that have got you particularly excited because they include some relative or brand newcomers?
Wonderful. That's actually a really great question. We always have folks that, to us, are the shining stars that you know, pack the rooms, as we say. However, we have some really interesting newcomers this year that to me make up a really strong beginning farmer track or newer beginning farmer track. So we have Will O'Mara and Jill Verzino, as well as another woman named Stephanie Berluti. Will and Jill own Hungry Reaper Farm in Waterbury, Connecticut, and then Stephanie owns South Haven Farms in North Haven. And they're doing a workshop called A Transparent Look at Year One on Two New Organic Farms. And what's interesting about that is both Will and Stephanie were journey people for the 2019 growing year for CT NOFA, which means we set them up with mentors, provided them with some grant funding to learn more things, and they each got their own farms. And now they're going to take this workshop time to look back and be completely honest with you about what worked, what didn't, if they're going to be pivoting anything, if they profited on something or lost money on something, because so many people have gotten into farming in the past couple of years, especially, you know, small farms. And we want people to see the truth of what that looks like. So I'm very excited by them. And I'm also really excited. She is my personal friend, but she should be everyone's friend. Her name is Nicole Smith, and she's a certified arborist in Connecticut. She works for Green Cross. And Nicole is pairing up with Mary Conklin, who is an educator at UConn, to give a talk on good planting and pruning practices for healthy fruit trees in an orchard. Nicole's really on the cutting edge of new planting techniques, which might not be exciting for everyone, but if you are aware and cognizant and of climate change, these new planting practices are going to help your orchard thrive and survive. And then proper pruning practices are going to help you get a better bounty every single year. So Nicole and Mary are pairing up to give that talk as well.
Well, that's great.
Those are just two of the things I'm interested in.
Great. Folks, if you're listening, we want to remind you, you can go to ctnofa.org for lots of background to get you ready for the virtual 2021 conference, the NOFA Connecticut and Rhode Island Winter Conference. So really not Organicon this year, a little bit more of a spread. And we're pleased that their conference coordinator, Ashley Kenny, was able to join us for a few minutes to talk a little bit about it. While we still have a couple of minutes with you, Ashley, you know, you talk about Zoom fatigue and people sitting in front of a screen, you know, just kind of meeting other people one-on-one or interacting or learning from the speakers and conference hosts, but there will be a little bit of a chance for these people to kind of get out of their own screen, at least from a person-to-person perspective, because you're also going to have some virtual farm tours for them, right?
That, well, yes, there'll be, so yes and no. We are hoping to add some more virtual farm tours to what we call guidebooks. So as the actual workshops go, you can attend those. And then we're using an app called Guidebook, which is really cool. It's basically a desktop, you know, app that you can access or on your phone, where it is, instead of getting that pamphlet when you walk in and you're mm-hmm. figuring out what room you're going to, what speaker you're going to see. You have it on your phone or on your computer. And what's cool is that you've got color photos, bios of the speakers. You can, you know, email contact information. And we'll also have some extras on there, which will be previously recorded farm tours that we've done that we're now making accessible to you.
Oh, nice.
So
that's great.
With the purchase price of your ticket, you'll be able to do those. And we are also working on acquiring Soulfire Farm's virtual keynote, which Soulfire Farm in upstate New York is a Black-owned and run farm started by Leah Penniman. And they have a virtual keynote they released this year that folks all around the country can pay for on a sliding scale and present. Since Soulfire Farm has been asked to present at so many conferences, they said, here, if you want us, here we go. We made you a keynote. And all money goes back to Soulfire Farm and the Northeast Farmers of Color, which is a nonprofit organization.
Fantastic. Well, in the last minute or two that we have with you, Ashley, you know, while I know from experience that putting on a virtual conference still has many of the trials and tribulations of doing it in person, there is a little bit of a sometimes a cost reduction, but there's still a lot of underwriting that has to be done. And looking forward to other programs as the warm weather gets here and NOFA begins to expand its in-person interactions and education and activities. And that means paying for all this with a virtual online auction, which has got some really, really cool stuff. Let's wrap it up just kind of giving us a preview of what folks can get their dirty hands on at the online auction.
Sure. So I'm actually a professional horse trainer and riding instructor in my full-time life. And so I'll be offering a riding lesson at the facility that I run in Milford, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Then there will be subscriptions to Edible Nutmeg Magazine, a CSA from Massaro Farm in Woodbridge, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And we're actually still collecting items. So if any listeners out there, There are more, but I honestly don't know what's coming in the last day. So I would love for folks out there, if they're interested at all in donating something to our online auction to help CT NOFA and NOFA Rhode Island, we would be so appreciative. And you could email me at winterconference@ctnofa.org.
Very good. Ashley Kenny is the Winter Conference Coordinator for Connecticut NOFA, sharing the responsibility with cohorts at Rhode Island's Northeast Organic Farmers Association. Their keynote speaker for this year's conference is Karen Washington. They're also offering 25-plus food and farming workshops, actually closer to 30 or a little over 30. They'll be introducing you to innovations in organic agriculture, having some meetups between farmers and gardeners, the virtual farm tours we just heard about, and then Friday night it's all kicking off with their annual meeting and the Bill Dusing Award along with the keynote. Please consider attending if you have any interest in organic gardening, farming, landscaping. They're all there for you. This year it's just going virtual. Go to ctnofa.org and learn more and get involved in this year's virtual conference. And Ashley, we look forward to it and hope to be talking to you again soon. Thanks for joining us. All right. Well, as we prompted in the introduction of the program this morning, we are going to be returning once again to an ongoing reporting initiative that we have here to bring all of our listeners across Connecticut, Long Island, and wherever you may be listening in New York, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, or anywhere in the world on our podcast. We're going to be talking about wind power and the difference it's going to be making here in Connecticut and in our neighboring states. And, you know, after a busy year in 2020 for the offshore wind industry and the new Biden administration coming in, making climate action and offshore wind a major priority, this year and the next several years should continue to see a lot of activity and growth for the industry, including right here in Connecticut. Anyone who's been listening to the award-winning For the People has heard a number of programs over the past couple of years about the installation of wind farms off the Connecticut and Rhode Island coast and the utilization of the state here in New London and all the potential growth that could be going on there. Renewable energy continues to be the fastest growing energy source in the country, with offshore wind playing a key role in that growth. And it's got it all, as we said in our introduction, critical climate benefits, economic development, jobs, and more. And today we're going to be talking all about it with Mike Ossier, Vice President of Renewable Energy Business Development for Eversource Energy, which is partnering with Ørsted Offshore North America. Matt Morrissey is with us. He's head of U.S. Market Affairs and Strategy for Ørsted. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming. So let's talk a little bit about, I guess, starting with Matt. Tell me a little bit more about Ørsted and how this partnership with Eversource came together.
John, thank you, and thanks for the support for the over the years from this program, because you know offshore wind is a new industry to America, and listeners have received information from your program that's essential to build an understanding of what this industry can be for us here in the U.S. So thank you for that support. And in fact, Ørsted is a company that's based in Denmark, and we are the world leader in developing offshore wind projects. In fact, we started offshore wind back in the early 90s in Denmark, where we had experience with various types of energy technology, but principally oil and natural gas. As all energy companies that have been around for a while have at their core, their foundation, their basis. And we had exposure to onshore wind. But we began the process of taking those turbines and refitting them to deal with the elements of operating in sea conditions. And as a result of the earliest of those really experimental projects that we had in the early 90s, today we are the clear world leader. We operate in multiple countries and jurisdictions around the world, principally in Europe and the UK. But that's changing rapidly as the technology expands. But in any new market, we are very focused as a company on making sure that we're grounded locally, that we understand the local landscape from every point of view. And we do that typically by establishing joint ventures with a local partner. Not always are they the area's utility, but we are very fortunate to have in Eversource the premier transmission provider in New England, yeah, to be our 50-50 JV partner. And offshore wind is certainly an area of the energy production portfolio that really has a tremendous amount of technical complexity around transmission. So in partnering with Eversource, we have the best of all worlds. They're local, they understand folks and issues here in New England, but they also have obviously the tremendous depth of technical transmission experience that we need to ensure that we're going to be putting our projects forward.
Yeah, not just that, Matt. Mike, Eversource is in a few states, and obviously in your capacity, you're interacting with utility and electrical companies, generators, carriers, all over the country, if not all over the globe. Tell us a little bit about where the U.S., or maybe even narrowing it a little bit more down to the region that we're in, where do we stand with offshore wind industry right now? I mean, it's obviously, I guess it could never be big enough to offset the need for other generating capacities. But I mean, where are we on the global scale?
Sure. And John, thanks so much again for having us on today. It's a pleasure to be here. So to give you a sense of where the U.S. offshore wind industry is and where we see it going. I mean, to start with where it is a new industry. It is a new source of renewable energy here in the United States today. It's not that way elsewhere in the world. In Europe, it is very much a mainstay of renewable energy, but it's new for the U.S. Today, it's a relatively small source of clean energy. There's only a relatively small project offshore Rhode Island that's in operation, and that's owned by a 30-megawatt wind farm. And then there's also just recently a small offshore wind farm that's been installed in Virginia. So today it's relatively small, but it is poised to grow to be the fastest, the fastest growing source of renewable energy here in the United States. So if you look up and down the Atlantic coast, even though it's still relatively new, it is growing rapidly. And this, and various states along the coast have announced procurement goals for offshore wind that, if you add it all up, total approximately 30,000 megawatts of clean energy. And just to give a sense of scale for that, in New England, on our peak days, our electrical demand is actually less than that amount. Now, this is up and down the Atlantic coast, so not all of that will serve New England, but just gives you a sense of scale for what the states are targeting. Now, for New England in particular, I looked at our generation profile this morning, and 20% of New England's clean energy today, 20% of New England's energy today is coming from renewable energy sources, primarily onshore wind, but also solar. But once New England implements its procurement goals for offshore wind, it'll easily take that percentage to over half of New England's energy will come from offshore wind. So we are very, very excited about that ability to bring large scale clean energy into New England and the rest of the Northeast.
You've both also got to be pretty excited about how quickly the switch has flipped, if you'll excuse the pun, in Washington, in Washington, D.C. I mean, you've got the Biden administration announcing this strategy to tackle climate change with offshore wind as its bedrock. I mean, that's like the king opening up the gates to the vault there from a perspective of energy and offshore wind providers and developers like you guys. Let's talk a little bit about how the administration is going to support that effort with its cabinet picks. We're not going to get into a lot of politics here, but you know, it all comes from the top down, right?
Yeah. John, this is Matt speaking here. I agree with the characterization. I think the cabinet that the president is putting together is one that will be aligned around the large, ambitious agenda that President Biden has put forth regarding attacking the climate crisis. And there's no doubt that offshore wind is indeed the foundation of that, because offshore wind is a technology, alongside many other renewable technologies. Offshore wind uniquely is a technology that goes to scale very quickly. We can produce power at scale that replaces older power plants that are coming off offline. I also think that you're seeing in some of these selections, you're seeing like-minded cabinet members who have been selected or nominated, should say, which have a experience base directly with offshore wind from their states, both New York, Rhode Island, and in Massachusetts. You see leaders that are coming forward in his cabinet that that support offshore wind, that should support the climate impacts that offshore wind can have. And as well, you also see individuals who understand the job creation that come with offshore wind. So I would expect that although offshore wind has really started in the days of the Bush presidency from the federal level, there has been a march along that route with some ambiguity, to be sure, over the last couple of years. Nevertheless, I think in the Biden administration, I think you're seeing the realities of the climate crisis, the need for jobs coming out of the COVID pandemic, knock on wood that we're coming out of it, come together around probably the most coordinated effort over these years to date. So we're very excited about what's happening with President Biden's cabinet.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, too, and given the fact that the message coming out of Washington is we welcome the opportunity, we're going to aggressively go after the opportunity to develop more offshore wind and alternative energy, it makes the destination of Washington a lot more of a friendly place for experts who can come to the table to help contribute to expediting and growing this development in a really practical, safe, and a beneficial way from an economic development standpoint, particularly with projects that are as well conceived and far along as this one in your partnership.
I mean, do I hear an amen? Yeah, no, it's absolutely the case, John. I mean, the fact is that the basis for offshore wind in the market and in the environment is rooted in good science, and we provide that offset, that carbon offset that's so critical to ensuring that we don't see the continued rapid kinds of increases in our greenhouse gas emissions that we have for the last 100 years. And so, you know, we have a technology that's well proven in other parts of the world. We have a cost structure that is cost competitive today, and we have the characteristics, the physical and geotechnical characteristics along the Atlantic seaboard in particular, that allow us to build offshore wind farms at scale that enable these climate change goals of the Biden administration. But it's all rooted in understanding the importance of data to inform decisions and how this technology moves forward. And that's obviously more welcome now than it had been in the last couple of years.
Great. We're talking with Matt Morrissey, who's head of U.S. Market Affairs and Strategy for Ørsted Offshore North America, and Mike Ossier, Vice President of Renewable Energy Business Development for Eversource Energy. These companies are partnering on a joint venture on several offshore wind farms in development in the Northeast, including Revolution Wind that you've heard about here on the award-winning For the People. We're going to be back to talk more with these gentlemen and focusing on some of the economic development and other important points, including a little talk about the investment in the state pier that's been a big subject here on our program. We're going to take a quick break, though, so stick with us to hear more about this exciting upcoming project. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. There's always something wild going on at the Beardsley Zoo, and Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo is inviting you to become a citizen scientist volunteer and participate in the 2021 Frog Watch Census. In a collaboration between the zoo, the Maritime Aquarium, and Yale's Peabody Museum of Natural History, volunteers will make regular visits to wetlands in their neighborhoods and keep a frog log to record the frog and toad calls they hear. Working with experts, volunteers learn about local frog species and then visit wetlands once or twice a week for about 15 minutes each night this spring and summer. Now, you volunteers do not need prior experience or knowledge about frogs, and you'll have just one training session to get in the know. And those are going to be available this Tuesday, March 2nd, or on Thursday, March 25th at 7 p.m. If you'd like more information and finding out how to register, just visit beardsleyzoo.org/frogwatch. All right, we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. We're talking offshore wind and clean energy development with Mike Ossier, Vice President of Renewable Energy and Business Development for Eversource Energy, and Matt Morrissey, who's head of U.S. Market Affairs and Strategy for Ørsted Offshore North America, developing Connecticut's first offshore wind farm, delivering potential 304 megawatts of power to the state. This project is currently advancing through permitting efforts, but you got to have a place to stage the work once it gets approved, and that means the state pier. Gentlemen, Matt, let's talk a little bit about your investment in the state pier, given the fact that it's been the subject of an entire segment on the program within the past 6 months. Just a quick little refresher and update on where things are at with the state pier.
Sure. Well, you know, the importance of the state pier, can't be overstated, in the sense that offshore wind is new in the overall kind of port economy, the port economies along the Atlantic seaboard. And because we're new, and because we have certain local requirements around infrastructure, and because our particular technology is large and is heavy, and even though the components are manufactured overseas at the moment, they are shipped here and they are loaded onto land in the U.S. and they are either there's fabric post-fabrication that is done, there is assembly that is done, there is a lot of work that is done to our components on land. We need specialized infrastructure first and foremost, and that infrastructure does not exist because we have not had in the Northeast the need for the kind of point loads, massive, massive point loads that are required in our port infrastructure facilities to allow us to do the work that we do. So the, in New London, what we have is a facility that has more than probably many facilities in the Northeast, even though there are others, various portfolio benefits. And perhaps the most important is proximity to our wind farms in the Northeast and a lack of any kind of interference from bridges in particular that would prevent us or restrict us from different types of deployment strategies. You know, these facilities, these barges, these vessels are all very large, and even some of the highest air clearance bridges can be a challenge.
Right.
So you know, we're in a situation right now where we have first you have to have a marketplace, and that now exists in Connecticut because of its procurement, as well as other Northeastern states, which this facility will be used for in deployment. Next, you have to have infrastructure, and then around that infrastructure, what you see occurring, John, is you see essentially that infrastructure becomes a magnet for other types of business to invest in and crowd around, and you see that in other places. There are many examples of this happening around the world, the ports that we operate in, whether it's Esbjerg, Denmark, or in Cuxhaven, Bremerhaven, Germany, or in Hull or Grimsby in the UK. You see this happening. First, the infrastructure, and then allied investments, private investments that take place around it that create jobs.
Yeah, well, Mike, nothing like $77.5 million to fortify the tax base in the greater New London and Connecticut, Rhode Island area. But it's not just about the investment in the state pier. There's a ton of job and economic benefits for Connecticut that we'll be seeing from the redevelopment of the state pier and this wind project. Give us a quick lowdown on some of the early expectations for jobs and economic development.
Sure. No, we're very excited about the potential here for State Pier and New London and the surrounding areas. And you touched on it, but before, again, the jobs, just give you a quick overview of our relationship with the Port Authority of Connecticut, as well as the state of Connecticut here. To your point, early last year, we announced an agreement with Connecticut Port Authority and the state where Eversource and Ørsted would finance or fund approximately half the cost to redevelop the state pier into a wind turbine generator pre-assembly hub, as well as a heavy lift facility for uses beyond the offshore wind construction phase. But if you include what we are investing up front with the state into the project, as well as lease payments we'll be making over the term of our lease, which is 10 years, it's over $90 million that Eversource and Ørsted will be invested into this. So really the embodiment of a public-private partnership here with the state. And as Matt said, we see tremendous opportunity for State Pier for lots of uses, but in particular for offshore wind because of its natural attributes. There are no obstructions between State Pier and the open ocean. It's a deep water pier. It's just ideally suited for offshore wind. So in terms of economic development, this is the way we see it. We expect construction for the project to begin pretty soon, actually, hopefully within the next month or two. We'll see some preliminary construction beginning, but then the significant construction will begin later this year. And this will be led by the Port Authority and the state. But during construction, we see up to 400 jobs being created out there while the pier is being redeveloped. It's a very significant construction effort. Today, if you were to go see the state pier, it's two piers, two finger piers, if you will. But those piers will be largely rebuilt. Furthermore, the area between the two piers will be filled. So you'll see one very large pier facility with heavy lift capability. So big construction effort. That'll create 400 jobs. And then once it's completed, when it's being used for wind turbine pre-assembly and load out, you're going to have vessel traffic in the form of delivery vessels bringing the components to the state pier. And so these are for the wind turbine generators. And so you're going to see arriving at State Pier, you'll see the turbine blades themselves, which each one alone is around, I mean, Matt, keep me honest here, but it is around the length of a football field. You'll actually see the generators there themselves, which are called nacelles, and then the towers, which is the portion of the asset that rises above the ocean. So it's going to be a lot of very large equipment that gets offloaded there, and then it'll be preassembled by a number of technicians, and then unloaded onto an installation vessel that'll take it out to the construction area. And so when it's in that mode of assembling the turbines for construction, we estimate it'll be around 100 jobs, full-time positions out there at the State Pier. So significant new source of employment. And these are highly skilled jobs as well, I should add.
Great. Well, our time is up, and so we're going to leave it there with that piece of good news, and count on our promise to convene again, as we did before we turned on the microphone this morning, in a few months, hopefully in person down there on the State Pier development once a number of these approval processes are and permitting is all completed. Very pleased once again to revisit the subject of wind power and Connecticut's offshore wind industry and the potential that will come from this joint venture between Eversource Energy and Ørsted Offshore North America. We have Mike Ossier with us. He's Vice President of Renewable Energy Business Development for Eversource, and Matt Morrissey, who's heading up U.S. Market Affairs and Strategy for Ørsted Offshore North America, combining their forces for several offshore wind farms in development in the Northeast, including Revolution Wind, which will be Connecticut's first offshore wind farm, delivering 304 megawatts of power to the state. Gentlemen, I thank you so much for your time this morning, and I look forward to talking more about this again and again. We'll see you soon. So we had the pleasure of meeting Patrice Gans a few months ago when she joined this sort of little Zoom volunteer coalition group that I happen to sit in on once in a while. And I was very intrigued a couple weeks ago when I heard a little bit more about her work. She is the founder and executive director of an organization out of the Western Connecticut area called Random Hacks of Kindness Junior. And this organization is working to bring young people hands-on learning experience where they apply technology to achieve social good. And so anyone who's a regular listener to the award-winning For the People knows that is it's like a bead of honey going to highlight an organization like this. So Patrice, welcome to the radio and the podcast, and tell me more about how you decided to launch this whole project.
Well, John, thank you so much for having me. So I worked in a school in Newtown called Fraser Woods Montessori School, and that was about 2013, and I was teaching technology at the school, and I had students from K through 8. We were doing programming, and when I had asked them a little bit about their interest or what, you know, how they saw themselves in coding and computer science and technology, the majority of students' response was that they were drawn to it, or they thought they would do it for the games, for playing computer games, sure what they call them nowadays. Video games, that's the word. Sorry.
Was for fun.
Right, yeah. Right. It was for fun. And that was a lovely answer, but not what I wanted for them. So as a result, I had decided to create some kind of an activity for them on this. Actually, coincidentally, in not a good way, this happened shortly after the shooting at Sandy Hook. Mm. So there was a lot of movement in the community at the time to do something for good. So I reached out to a lot of the different community organizations and some people that I knew through the computer science teaching area. Mm-hmm. And brought together my students with some computer science teachers, college students, to work together to make some kind of technology for these nonprofits or organizations that had that had come to be as a result of the shooting.
Yeah.
And the kids absolutely loved it. Now, I didn't have all my students participate, so I invited also students from around the area, from other schools that I knew. Some of the people that I knew brought their kids. So it was a huge, very positive experience. Mm. I got a lot of positive feedback. There was a lot of great energy in the room because they were doing something that they enjoyed, but creating something powerful from that by making some type of technology, be it a website, be it an app, be it a game. But it was all towards the end of doing something to promote the cause of the nonprofit.
How interesting is it that when you say we're going to get into the subject of STEM education and tell you how you're going to be able to apply it to do, some public good, or you're going to be able to help some nonprofits that are trying to support the families and the community that was involved in this horrible tragedy.
Right.
Versus saying, we're gonna do some really interesting and helpful things for people in trouble or for people who need it, and we're going to do it utilizing STEM education. You know, as soon as you tell them that they can help, it's just like, what flaming hoop do I have to jump through to provide that help? But when you tell them you're going to learn something and then be able to help somebody with it, sometimes maybe not such a warm reaction.
I guess they... It definitely resonated with them, and it showed them that something that they enjoyed to do could make a difference. And since then, I formed a nonprofit where that's exactly, I left teaching, and that's all we do is have kids work with nonprofits to make, and at this point, it's just smartphone apps. Mm. They're never completed apps. They're just what we call prototypes, but the kids get to work with the nonprofits directly. So they come, this is before COVID.
Yeah.
They would come to the hackathons and sit with the kids in their groups, and they would work with a mentor and the nonprofit, and they would brainstorm, and they would get to know, the passion of the causes that these nonprofits were championing.
Mm.
And they felt like they had an opportunity to make a difference. And it really is amazing, because that's what a lot of them walk away with, is that feeling of doing something good. And I've even had some mentors come to a hackathon and then go on to do some kind of program or volunteer for that nonprofit. So a lot of connections are created.
Sure.
At these programs.
And the exposure to these mentors might be something that these young people might not ever get in any other arena unless
right.
they came to the Random Acts of Kindness Junior place. Tell us a little bit about some of the great minds that you're bringing to bear on behalf of these young people that are so willing to learn and help.
So you mean the
your mentors? Yeah, no. Tell us about mentors. Some of the mentors and the experts.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we have mentors that come in. So sometimes we have high school students.
Yep.
So those would be students that come from area high schools that have studied computer science. We have the same thing with students at universities. And then we've had some computer science professionals that have volunteered their time. Mm. Predominantly, the kids seem to really connect with either high school or the college students. I would have to say the vast majority of the students, obviously, that are college students are all computer science professionals. They're people that are interested in studying computer science, that might be doing, cybersecurity
sure.
or data science, fields that they can then share their experiences with their students.
Mm-hmm.
Then for the high school students, they're people that are exploring what it means to be in computer science. You know, a lot of them have taken a class, but they're not so sure about it. And then they go on, not all of them, but a good percentage of them will go on to major in it in college and hopefully go and get a job in it.
Well, that's pretty exciting.
We've had a couple, it's very exciting because there's just so much you can do with computer science. Yeah.
Well, how do you attract the kids to be part of Random Hacks of Kindness Junior?
So we have hackathons again, and when we're doing it in person, we had them all over the state, and we also had a hackathon once in New Jersey. So kids would normally come from wherever that hackathon was, geographically. So we had a hackathon and Mitchell College up in, is that like the north, southeast? I'm very bad at my, part of New London area of Connecticut.
Yeah, yeah.
So the students would come from New London. I had a hackathon in Hamden, Quinnipiac.
Oh, okay.
Hackathon up in the northwest corner at Northwestern Connecticut Community College.
Mm-hmm.
Hackathon down in Greenwich. So depending on where I was, would be where the students were coming from.
Okay.
Now, because of COVID, I've had students from all over.
That's great.
So I had one of my mentors, who's an amazing young woman. She was a student, high school student in Stanford. And I forget, West Hill, maybe. I always forget the names of the different high schools.
Yeah, yeah.
And she moved out to Texas with her family. I connected with her through LinkedIn, and now because of the pandemic, she's been mentoring from Texas, and she's also had other people come from Texas that have participated. I had two boys, actually, that came from Rhode Island to one of the hackathons in person, drove all the way down from Rhode Island. When I had the hackathon in New Jersey, I had a couple of people from New Jersey participate recently virtually.
Excellent.
So, to answer your question, they're coming from all over.
Great. Well,
sorry.
No, that's okay. We're just about out of time, but I can't leave you without letting people know how to find you. Random Hacks of Kindness Junior has got a really easy website, rhokjr.org, and you can go to that website to find out where some of the next upcoming hosted activities are happening, how you can get more involved, whether you want to bring your youngest children on board to benefit from these mentors, or whether you want to be a mentor and possibly get involved in helping to educate future generations of young people who are applying technology to achieve a social good. Patrice Gans is the founder and executive director of Random Hacks of Kindness Junior. Once again, rhokjr.org. Patrice, great to meet you, and thanks so much for your
time
this morning. And we'll come back and talk a little bit more about this at a future visit. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.